And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 20th, Martin Luther King Day, 2020. Today we're joined by our guest, the manager, the author of the Climate Exchange Roundup, a weekly newsletter that you can get, Mr. Tim Cronin. How you doing, Tim?
Good, good. How are you? Thanks for having me back.
Great to have you along. Great to have you on. So, Tim, let me tell you a story. And
I love stories.
Least, yeah. About a man named Jed. Let's just start out this way. All right. The major oil companies, that is to say coal companies, Exxon, these guys are generally considered the villains of the climate movement, right? They're the bad guys. If for lots of reasons we don't have time to get into, they knew about climate change many, many years ago. They're still pushing confusionist agendas. They are basically the enemy, and we need to find some way to weaken that enemy, right? So there's a concept that attacking or making the commercial exercise of the big oil companies less is a good thing. The other interesting idea that I wanted to put into the discussion sort of as a preamble is the idea of what's a stock. A stock, I went and looked it up. It's part ownership of a company, right? Like ExxonMobil. So you buy one piece of stock, you own a little tiny bit of ExxonMobil, and from that you get earnings and you own a piece of their assets. Now, in the case of Exxon, their assets are things like all the oil rigs they have out in the Atlantic Ocean polluting our beautiful seashore. But their assets are also things like oil that's in the ground that they haven't extracted yet, right? And that the value of that stock depends a lot on the assets that a company like Exxon thinks it holds, okay? So those are two ideas that we you want to start out with. Of course, the question of combating the power of big oil, most people have heard of something called the divestment movement. You've heard of that, right? This goes now back, what, 10 years or so? We're still trying to get Harvard to divest its but what's divestment? Divestment is an effort by an institution to publicly sell off its stock in fossil fuel companies like coal stocks or Exxon stocks, right? Now, when you think about it, selling off the stocks. So if Harvard were to sell all of its stocks in Exxon, which God willing, someday they will, right? Mm. They were to sell all those stocks. Someone would buy them and the world would go on, right? However, by dumping those stocks, Harvard has made reduced the demand for the stock of Exxon, and therefore the price goes down a little. But primarily what it's done is to deny Exxon some kind of social license. I don't know how much TV you watch, Tim. I watch too much. But all I see are nice ads telling me how ExxonMobil is growing algae to save the planet and how they're really the leaders of the, right? They need to have the social license and the social approval of people. Right, and they're desperate for it. And by divestment, these big divestment statements actually deny them and say, "Hey, you're doing a bad thing," publicly out loud. Right. Mm. So there's a concept of divestment as a way to weaken the big oil guys. A second way to weaken the big oil guys is something that, again, Bill McKibben led us to. He's talking about keep it in the ground. I'm sure you've heard of that. Damn right, keep it in the ground movement. What's the keep it in the ground movement? What that says is that all of the oil that's in the ground should stay there. And as a consequence, those assets that, you know, all the oil that Exxon thinks it owns under the Arctic suddenly becomes not very valuable. And its stock price goes down. Again, this is a way to attack the big oil companies. And so the whole concept of keep it in the ground is another way to, aside from having the obvious climate benefits of not burning the fossil fuels, it also weakens these majors. And you can think the next president, whoever she is, hopefully will ban drilling on federal lands, right? There's all this stuff out west, right? People are digging up coal and doing fracking, right? Just ban it outright. That's it. Anyway, there's a second. There's a third concept. And here's where, Tim, we want to talk. It's a concept of stopping the financing of these big oil companies. So suppose you're ExxonMobil and you want to drill in the Arctic, right? You need a very expensive ship. You have to pay people. It's a big technical project, you know, billions of dollars. So what do? You're Roy Tillerson or Rex Tillerson, I guess is what his name, right? You want to go explore in the Arctic and dig up all that nice, juicy fossil fuel up there. What do? You go to a big bank and borrow several billion dollars, right? And you take that several billion dollars and you go off and you buy the big ship and you hire the people to go work in the Arctic. The other thing that you would do if you're Exxon and you want to go explore in the Arctic is to go and get some insurance, because things get pretty risky, right? You buy that ship. What if it sinks, right? Who's going to pay for that big ship if it sinks? So you go buy insurance. And it turns out that of those two specifics, there's a company called J.P. Morgan Chase, which is a big bank. I don't know how big. Do you know how big? I mean, it is enormous.
Trillions, for sure.
And an interesting point, J.P. Morgan Chase is way, way, way bigger than Exxon, right? So Exxon's not that important a customer to J.P. Morgan. But J.P. Morgan has given, get this statistic, has loaned out $196 billion for new oil exploration since 2016, since the signing of the Paris Accord, right? And so the idea that J.P. Morgan Chase ought to not do that occurred to Bill McKibben, who is Star Will. Tim, I'm going to ask you to describe that program in a minute. The other interesting thing is the insurance. So there's this company called Liberty Mutual. Again, I watch too much TV, but everyone's familiar with the stupid emu that the computer-generated graphic bird that walks around and does crazy things, right? That's Liberty Mutual. They are a huge insurer of fossil fuel projects. And the argument that McKibben has made is that if somehow J.P. Morgan said, there's too much risk, I'm not going to get my money back, I'm not going to loan you that $10 billion to go invest. And if Liberty Mutual said, I'm not going to insure your crazy Trans Mountain pipeline project, these things would stop very quickly. Is that the kind of thing that you've heard, Tim? Tell me, is that a story you're familiar with?
That's a story that it makes a lot of sense, but it's one of the things that I actually haven't thought about a lot until I really started hearing about all this, until Bill McKibben put his article in the New Yorker, and until kind of the larger campaign that he and others are leading really drew attention to it. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, these organizations, as you mentioned, they are on like kind of rickety stilts when it comes to these financing these projects. I mean, for the longest time, they've been living off and surviving off government subsidies in one way or another. And so the idea that this is kind of a critical aspect of it, all this money that's being brought in and essentially being subsidized by these insurance companies, by these big banks who are able to finance them, right. I think that makes a lot of sense. So
and so what McKibben has done is to start something called – so there's an article. We talked about it, last September, an article in the New Yorker called Money is the Oxygen That Fuels the Climate Crisis. But most recently, in the past week or so, there's been an a campaign begun, I think, with the Sierra Club called Stop the Money Pipeline, right? Which is the connection of basically this huge flow of money into the oil industry, with the argument being that if J.P. Morgan didn't want to invest anymore in Exxon would crash and J.P. Morgan would be fine, because Exxon is like a tenth of a percent of the money that J.P. Morgan holds, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's really like some of the messaging around this group is really spot on. It's that Wall Street is financing climate destruction. I mean, it's the money that is being moved around on Wall Street is being moved into these companies in order to help essentially allow them to continue to extract fossil fuels and destroy our planet. So it's like,
I mean, in this past Friday, Jane Fonda is now, again, doing the, I mean, she was doing the right thing then, she's doing the right thing now, getting arrested every Friday with this gorgeous red coat on in front of the Capitol building with other movie stars to highlight the issue of climate change, right? It's I forget the name of it, but she has been arrested Fridays, now. Yeah. Fire Sale Friday, but it's some catchword. And she has done an amazing thing of bringing attention to this. This past Friday, now I guess it's like the 10th or so, she coordinated with Bill McKibben. So Bill McKibben was sitting in the lobby of the J.P. Morgan Chase Bank in Washington, D.C., as Jane Fonda and this huge crowd were getting arrested in front of the Capitol. And then they all marched over to the J.P. Morgan Chase Bank where Bill McKibben got arrested. I mean, this is the kind of pressure that can be brought to bear on the finance industry. And it's a good thing it's happening, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, 100%. I mean, the thing that's really fascinating is just how much of an impact this has on their ability to do this. Like, I think one of the things when I first heard this story that I found fascinating was on one end you have the traditional divestment movement, like you mentioned, and that's really about, you know, institutions and kind of further up the stream trying to get away from this money and stop investing in fossil fuel companies. On the other side, you have, you know, social investing and kind of companies doing the right thing. I think this movement really starts to connect those dots on some level. I think they connect the dots between almost personal responsibility between what companies are supposed to be doing and targets really those big players. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think we as a movement, you know, you and I as climate activists, the listeners as climate activists, I think that we're always focusing on a lot of things, rightfully so. And this is one of those issues I really think is on, I guess, for the lack of a better term, the up and up. It's one of those things I think I hope other groups beyond the Sierra Club really start to focus in on, because on some level, like JP Morgan Chase, Liberty Mutual, BlackRock, which is also mentioned, they all invest in companies or they're somehow associated with things that occur in our every single day, whether it's our banking, whether they finance things locally, like the Weymouth compressor station. Like the connection to our everyday life is shocking. And I commend Jane Fonda and Bill McKibben and everyone else for kind of drawing attention to that connection.
Well, I think that connection is an interesting segue, because the third aspect of the finance, just keep in mind, we talk about J.P. Morgan, which will loan money to Exxon to buy stuff, right? Liberty Mutual will insure Exxon's crazy harebrained scheme to go destroy some new Vista, right? There's this other company called BlackRock, which is an investment company, right? And they invest in what seem to be legitimate ongoing concerns like Exxon, right? And BlackRock is huge. They're like $7 trillion with a T dollars, right? They're big, big, big. And they handle a lot of what are called pension funds. So these are like very staid investment funds where people are retired. They don't want to mess around with the money, right? They don't want any risk in there. So are you familiar with what happened vis-a-vis BlackRock in this past week? Can you tell me that story?
Yeah. I mean, this kind of movement that Bill McKibben started, it's called Stop the Money Pipeline. It's kind of, I guess, the name of it. I think they launched on the 9th of January. And then as recently as, I think I saw the article, it was like January 14th. So it was last week. The founder and kind of the head of BlackRock, the company you mentioned, $7 billion, they announced $1 trillion. Oh, see, it's such a crazy number. You're like, there's definitely countries out there that don't have that much money. And that's ridiculous on its own, but separate issue. But BlackRock, it's $7 trillion. They announced that the climate crisis is something that they need to focus in on, that they need to, they need to be aware of the presence of only investing in things that aren't high risk, according to sustainability. What was the term they used? Avoid investments in companies that, quote, present a high sustainability risk.
And so let me just jump in there for a second. I mean, because I had to think about it for a little bit. The high sustainability risk to me means that from an investment, from BlackRock's perspective, they don't want to put money into a business that is going to get caught by a carbon tax. right? Mm. And all of a sudden their business model goes pear-shaped. You know, the company's business model goes pear-shaped because all of a sudden there's a carbon fee. BlackRock doesn't want to be standing there holding the bag of having – so, you know, when we talk about sustainability risk, we're not talking about temperature rises. We're talking about the fact that the investments might just evaporate. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I think another part of that too is that with the ongoing climate crisis, I think – investing in things that have the potential to be taxed by a carbon tax, like the energy sector, or things that just in general are going to be contributing to the issues, just makes no sense. I think I was reading an article about how if BlackRock had done this 10 years ago, if they had stopped investing in the top energy companies on the S&P 500, which is a grouping of 500 top companies, the energy companies there 10 years ago, between 10 years ago and now, have only gained about 2%. They've only made about 2% of money. Compare that to the rest of the S&P, which is the rest of the economy that isn't those. Between 10 years ago and now, that has increased by 300%. And so even in the wake of, without even carbon prices for that matter, which is something I'm sure that they're thinking of when they're looking at this, I think that they are starting to recognize that this is a terrible investment. They should have been doing this before. And it's a terrible investment for the environment, but also just financially.
Yeah. And I think that McKibben makes the case that because a couple of things, McKibben and the group are not advocating that BlackRock or JP Morgan shut down Exxon, which they kind of could if they wanted to. They're just saying that at the moment, all that JP Morgan Chase has to do is stop loaning money for new projects, right? That's enough. Mm-hmm. That's a place to begin. And you let things wind down. Point being that if these big financial majors make the move, everyone else will make the move very quickly, and that there could be a fast response on this kind of financial thing. What does somebody call it? The canary in the coal mine. Is that I guess one question I have for you is, I looked in the BlackRock letter, this famous letter. I guess the guy's name is Larry Fink, is the head of BlackRock, right? He put out a letter saying they were going to end participation in thermal coal, which I guess is a fancy way of saying coal plants where you burn coal. Right? Mm-hmm. And they were going to, quote unquote, screen fossil fuel, which means, you know, they're going to think about it, but they might just keep marching along investing, right? So it's kind of a weak soup of promises, but still in all, it's pretty profound that they even felt obliged to recognize and take an action. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say it's pretty profound that they did, especially right after the whole campaign was announced. And I think it's also, I mean, I think I sense a little bit of cynicism in your voice, and I share that cynicism to some extent. I mean, I can't imagine a $7 trillion company kind of always doing the right thing, but I'm glad that they did this letter, because the thing is like, you know, making some funds here or there that invest only in non-fossil fuels or not investing in thermal coal is good, but I mean, we just stop investing in all fossil fuels. That includes natural gas. That includes oil as well. And then also with funds, I mean, all funds. When I put my money into my retirement account, I want that standard to not include any fossil fuel investments. I don't want some kind of fancy sub account that I have to go figure out. Like I read about that, and I was like, how do I invest in that easily? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the real thing. It's like, maybe they should have funds that, you know, people who really climate deniers can invest in stuff or whatever. They should be the exception.
Right. Yeah. Everyone else.
Climate change. That's what it should be. So.
I'm with you on that. We'll keep an eye on that development, right? All right. Well, we should put it down there. We'll put up links to some of these relevant things, particularly the BlackRock letter and the Jane Fonda action. It's all very interesting and useful stuff. You can find those links at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. And you can please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what you think we ought to talk about, or what we shouldn't talk about, or your idea for saving the world. I mean, we want to hear it. You can, of course, listen to the show on your smartphone using almost any of the modern podcast distribution apps, including Stitcher and Spotify. We're on Spotify now. I want to thank D.R. Tucker for his research support, his continuing research support. And we want to close where we always close by saying that because we – oh, wait a minute, Tim. say again, where is your, how can people sign up for the Climate Exchange newsletter?
Yeah, go to climate-exchange.org.
Climate-exchange with an X.
With an X.
With an exchange.org. Okay. So we're going to close the way, having said that, we're going to close the way we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of those things, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next 10 years under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Tim, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me back.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon.
Very cool.